paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This week, for our Sarah J. Maas Small Business Showcase, we want to introduce you to Celestial Fairy Trove. This small shop has everything you need to read in comfort and style. We are in love with their Kindle cases, and they have blankets from all the Sarah J. Maas series. Make sure you check out their Etsy shop to snag all of your ACOTAR, Throne of Glass, and Crescent City themed merch. You can use GoodishGirls20, that's GoodishGirls20, at checkout for 20% off. All right, Madison, who is your book boyfriend of the day?
The book boyfriend of the day is going to be Dorian, because I need a prince with a developed prefrontal cortex.
That's a good choice. And what is something that Dorian would never do?
Dorian just would straight up never. Dorian is angel baby.
He would never do anything wrong.
There is a shirt that I've been looking at on Etsy that literally says Dorian would never, and he wouldn't.
And he wouldn't.
He wouldn't.
You are right.
Because
you are 100% right. I love it.
Because last week I said, Cardin, I finished The Wicked King. Cardin, if I see you, Cardin, it's on sight.
Throwing hands. Oh my gosh. For those who are just listening to this show, Madison is violent today. She raised a fist to the screen.
I went to bed in a rage.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, warning for those who have not read The Cruel Prince, get ready. Because I think you might
mad about it in the
trauma
comments.
Bond with her.
Yeah.
Yes, trauma bond with Madison over this fictional man.
Let's talk about how dumb Cardin is, because I'm ready to see his answer behind his doing, because the answer is going to be rich.
Yeah.
Who was That's your funny. Book boyfriend of the day?
Ooh, Luther from the Everflame series.
I haven't read that one yet. He's
so great. He's fabulous.
Wait, is that the one that we talked about last week or no?
I think
you brought up Lightlark?
Yes. Grim. Grim from Lightlark was mine last week, and he would also never.
Cardin would.
Bye, Cardin. R.A.P. you. Bye, boy.
Trash.
Yes. And Luther. Luther would never wear dirty boots in the house. He would take off his shoes.
Pet peeve of mine. Anytime, literally every time I finish sweeping, someone walks through wearing shoes. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Luther would never. And this is a nod to my husband, who wears dirty boots in the house.
No tea, no shade.
I know you're listening to this. I know you listen.
No shade, but take off your shoes.
No shade. Your name's not Luther, but it could be. Stop wearing your boots in the house.
We listen and we don't judge, except if you wear boots in the house.
Then we're judging. Take off your shoes, feral animals.
Shoes in the house.
Welcome to the Goodish Girls, guys. I'm Dallas.
I'm Madison.
And we are here with Crescent City. Woohoo! We are, if you have not listened to the previous two episodes, please go back and listen to those. So that way you are caught up with what is happening. If you are just getting here and you've watched the other two episodes, this is a reminder that we are doing things a little bit differently than a normal deep dive, because we are guiding you through, this is a guided tour of Crescent City. So each week we are covering a series of chapters. With those series of chapters, we are not jumping ahead in the book. So there is not spoilers for the whole book during the first chunk of this episode, because we know that some of our Sarah J. Maas first friends are hesitant to read this book, or sometimes it can be a little overwhelming. Someone described it to me as they felt like they were being waterboarded the other day. And I said, don't worry. I've got you. We've got you. We're going to guide you through all the things. We're going to break down the houses. We're going to remind you what characters belong to who, all of the things. So as you're going through, you have a basically a lovely map of the area. So today we are covering chapters 14 through 19. So if you have read through chapter 19, you are good. If you have not, pause, go back and listen and or read those chapters, and then come back and hang out with us and we'll go through all the things. However, at the end of each episode, for our Sarah J. Maas friends who have read the series and do want to get into the crazy theories and lore that we have going on, we have what's called the House of Theory and Lore. We are taking you deep into all of the Sarah J. Maas first. So we are going to be talking about Crescent City for sure, but we're also going to be connecting dots between Throne of Glass and ACOTAR, things like that. So you are welcome to stick around for that if you have read the series or if you just don't care about spoilers and you want to be there for the vibes. That's okay. You may not understand exactly what's happening, but that's totally fine. You hang out. You do you. So let's do it. Chapter 14. Here we go. Start us off, Mads.
Quick note, because it pops in my head every single time. Every time you're like, we're going to go on a guided tour of Crescent City, I always think of like the people in theme parks that have like the microphone and the speaker yes. and like the little flag. And they're like, okay, guys, like follow me.
Follow me. Yes. Or like I'm on a bus.
Yeah.
Like the big two-story buses and I have like my mic on.
Buses.
And this right here is Lunathian.
Over here we have Griffin and yeah. Teeks. Don't talk to Jezebel. She'll turn you to an animal.
Don't even look at Jezebel. Don't look her way. Everyone wink at Hunt Athalar.
Ugh.
Yes, that's exactly the vibe I want to give up. I'm glad it's working. Amazing. Chapter 14. Let's do it.
Now I feel like I need a little mic. Okay, guys. Now we're going to go yes. to the Autumn King's library / study.
You know what's funny is that you actually have a mic in front of you. You can just hold it if it makes you feel better.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, oh gosh, what is the one specific thing that – oh gosh, the lady in the Lizzie McGuire movie whenever they go to Italy.
Oh, yes.
I feel like I need one of those. Like the little
I wore one of those yesterday in real life.
Really?
Yes. to the presentation at work. And I like put on my little mic and I had the box and I was like walking around like
da-da-da-da. I have a love-hate relationship with those because like every now and then I'll be talking, but like
nothing comes out of the speaker. There was times where I would like talk and then I would like start talking and I was like, oh, I can't hear it. And then I have to like move the mic again. And I was like, okay, now can you hear me?
Yeah. Or sometimes because those little mic boxes, they are loved until they die. Like sometimes I would be like standing in specific spots and you would just hear like this, like nails on chalkboard, like screeching. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry.
No. Oh, I hate that. That did not happen yesterday, thankfully, but no. it might one day.
I don't like the little things. There was one time we had like a little, almost like a little karaoke thing. We had like an actual microphone. Loved that. However, it did not survive in Antarctica very well. So it did not live long.
R.I.P. Miss you, Mike.
Gone, but never forgotten.
Never forgotten. Rest in peace, my friend. Technology is the worst. I hate it. It's literally my downfall. If I could run this podcast and never use technology, it would be amazing.
That would be phenomenal.
One day we're going to have a tech guy or girl. A tech person to help me with all of the technology.
I'm like accidentally good at technology. Like I remember I was in, oh gosh, I think it was like in eighth grade. And I had like this teacher who did not understand technology. And it would be like simple little fixes. And so I became like the tech person. So anytime she couldn't figure anything out, she'd be like, Madison, I need your help. And I'm like, okay, can't promise all no things. I'm just like randomly just like touching and poking things and it works. And she's like, how did you do that? I'm like, couldn't tell you.
Oh man.
Couldn't tell you.
That's like being the braid person. Like once you tell a group that you can braid hair, you're like the person.
Yep.
That I don't was tell my anybody sister. That I can braid hair.
That was my sister. Whenever she played volleyball in high school, she was the one who braided everyone's hair, but no one knew how to braid. So she was the only one.
She never got her hair braided. She had to do it herself. Yeah.
And I was forced to learn how to braid hair because of that. She was like, you're going to sit here and you're going to braid my hair. And I did learn, but for whatever like reason, I don't know what power above made this happen. But like if I braided someone's hair for like the first year, I could French braid other people's hair, but if I tried to French braid my own hair, it would always turn into a Dutch braid, and I couldn't figure out why. But now I can French braid my own hair, and I don't know how to go back to the Dutch braid.
Oh, that's funny. I can show you.
Okay.
Because I know
it's like instead of going, I think like under, you go, oh, I don't know. I did it accidentally.
So under for Dutch, over for French.
Mm.
And then under for Dutch, so it pushes the hair like up.
Interesting.
Like a, not like a Rumi braid from K-pop Demon Hunters, but like kind of like that.
That's not even a Dutch braid.
It's like a fancy dragon braid with rubber mm-hmm. bands and stuff. But like the look of it is somewhat Dutch, similar. Yeah. As far as like, because a French braid's like inward. So mm-hmm. yes, that's fair.
Love Rumi.
All right, here we go.
Sorry, focused.
Start us off, chapter 14.
Okay, for real, we are actually in
the listeners forgot why we're here.
For real, we are actually in the Autumn King's study / library. For whatever reason, whenever I picture a library, my brain automatically goes to the library in Beauty and the Beast. Couldn't tell you why, because it's not described in that way in the slightest.
Yeah,
but it's fine. But his library or his study / library does happen to have like two stories worth of bookshelves. He also has artifacts new and old, magic and non-magic. Dare I say he might give Jezebel a run for her money. I feel like if you combine like what Jezebel has and what he has, like mm-hmm. that would be unstoppable and dangerous. He also has this thing, it's called, I pronounced it an Ori. I don't know how you pronounced
right.
it. Okay.
I think
we're
going right.
to go with it. Which is something he is obsessed with and that he will obsess with throughout the series. And mm-hmm. it essentially is a painting on the ceiling that depicts their solar system with seven planets, their suns, and their moons. Mm-hmm. And Rune was actually obsessed with this for a while. And then he found out his dad was trash. And anytime he's like, oh, what are you doing? And his dad was just like, I'm studying patterns. And Rune's like, you want to elaborate? And the king's like, no.
No.
I'm good. Thanks for asking, though.
Not really.
It's like, I'm not going to elaborate on what I'm doing, but like, if you'd like to give me a piece of your light, like,
oh my gosh.
I guess that's cool.
That man, I cannot. It's the worst.
But this chapter is all through Rune's perspective. So we get everything from his perspective. We also learn, or I should say, reiterate the social hierarchy again. Mm-hmm. So if you're tired of it, too bad. I'm going to explain it again.
Too bad.
So you have the Asteri who rule. They are the top dogs. Under the Asteri, like we learned last week, they have the archangels who also go by governors. And they are specifically chosen by the Asteri and bred by the Asteri. So aside from the Asteri, like I mentioned, you have archangels / governors. And they rule their specific region of the planet. And within the archangels ruling, their kind of form of police officers, if you will, is the 33rd. So the 33rd responds specifically to the archangels. And each region has their own number, I'll say. Because like we learned last episode, whenever Hunt was doing that rebellion with Shahar, I believe that one was the 31st. So everyone has their own numbers, but the number people respond to the archangel people. Mm-hmm. And then under archangels, you have the city heads, which rule over their specific district. So whenever you're looking at your fun little map in Crescent City, if you are one of those people that do refer to maps, every single place has a city head. So for the Autumn King, for example, he is the city head of Five Roses, which did not click to me whenever Rune was talking about this. He mentioned Fyro, and I'm like, what the heck is Fyro? And I was looking at my map, and he's like, ah, Five Roses. That was a little unnecessary, but okay, buddy.
So, I feel like you're probably not the only one. I feel like there was a lot of people who were like, hold on, like, Fyro, that's probably a different place. But, like, if you now know Fyro, Five Roses.
Because I was looking so hard in the map. I was like, what
where
the
is Fyro?
And then I saw Five Roses. I'm like, ah, got it.
That's
also
so funny.
Five Roses. Is that not okay? Because we talked about it the first episode where mm-hmm. Bryce goes on a date with Reed. Mm-hmm. Did she just say Five Roses? And it's the district? Because I thought like it was a place, like a restaurant. Maybe I'm just dumb and it just didn't click.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'm not a person that like if I read about something, I'm like, hold on, let me turn to my map real quick. I raw dog it and just go by ear.
That's funny. I'm very big map girl. So I'm like, even when I'm writing these episodes, I'm like, pull down my map.
No, see, whenever I read a fantasy book, I will like flip through the pages. I'll see the map. I'll appreciate the art. I'm like, oh, that's cute. Now into the story. And I'll just like, should I reference the map? Probably. It'd probably help with a lot. Case in point, Firo.
Oh my God. I think if an author ever listens to this, they're going to cringe. They're going to be like, I designed these maps to help you.
Sorry. Listen, like, I think the only time I like religiously used a map is whenever I was reading the Empyrean series, just because things happen and I'm trying to Scooby-Doo and find out all the things and figure the things out before the next book releases. And so I'm like trying to pinpoint like full like crime show. I got my board, I got my pins, I got my string.
Pins and strings. Yeah. I got pins and strings in here. For Crescent City and Quicksilver, obviously. I always have pins and strings going on over there. Little sticky notes everywhere.
Maybe I'll learn to do pins and strings in the future.
Do it. Yeah. Five roses, Firo. Same. Now yes. We know.
But the city heads, they are appointed specifically by Micah. So every city head for that district is appointed by their specific archangel. And just like the archangels, they have their own police force, which is the 33rd. Each city head has an ox that obeys them. An ox is essentially another police division, but it's divided by districts and divided by species.
Like the SWAT teams.
Exactly. So Rune is the head of the Fae Ox division, but Danica, RIP queen, she was the head of like the Pax Ox. But yeah, that is another breakdown of that hierarchy. But we learn more about Rune and his backstory while he is debriefing the king on this case. So fun facts about him. Again, he's head of the Ox. He's been that for the past 15 years. Did a little math to find out that he made the drop at 25. And essentially, the drop again is whenever you go into yourself to make this drop into your magical source. And then after that, you have to make your way back up or you risk death. But he made that drop and he got so close to his dad's own power, but just like a little bit of less. And Rune's like, you know what? Honestly, that's fine because I've seen what dear old dad does to enemies and I'd rather not be on that side. So like if I have a little bit of less, that's fine. However, he does come out on top because he is Starborn Fae, which is something that his dad is not. But Rune is also one of 12 princes that make up the Fae, and Rune is the only Starborn Fae out of all of them. And essentially, whenever in Fae culture for Crescent City, they go through two great rites. So one of them is at age 13, whenever they go see the Oracle and they get a reading of their future. That happens, and then either a few years or maybe a few decades, they have something called an ordeal, and that could be something as easy as combating an illness or killing a monster. For Rune, he does his ordeal, and we'll learn more about his ordeal in a few chapters, but that is something that he has also completed. But we learn more about his relationship with Bryce. And even though to the world they think Bryce and Rune are cousins, we know that they are siblings. And we learn about the first time that Bryce actually visits the Autumn King in his court, and she was 13 years old. So she essentially visited the same time she had her ordeal. And for whatever reason, goes to the Oracle, visits, has a falling out with dear old dad, and Rune just remembers seeing her just storm off, not even bothering to look back. Rune tries to visit periodically 3 years after all that, but eventually they have a little disagreement. Words were said, regrets were had, but that's essentially the last time that Bryce and Rune visited until then. We also learn that within Rune's lineage, he possesses more of Valen traits, which he got from his mom, more than his dad's Valbaran traits. So that's where the Valbaran is where his dad's firepower comes from, which Rune at this point has had zero showings of that. But he does have fun little shadow powers, and he can walk through shadows and manipulate them, which is
so
very,
can we call
cool.
him a shadow daddy then? Because I know 100%. there was like conflict of like who is technically shadow daddy, who is not shadow daddy, but Rune is shadow daddy. We can call him that.
Certified
amazing
shadow daddy,
certified, stamped, approved.
But we also learn a little bit about Rune's mom, which I think is very interesting, and I think that we gloss over it too much. Like I feel like we need to know more, because we learn that Rune's mom was like specifically chosen to produce an heir with the Autumn King, and there's been many girls before and after her, but she's the only one that has like been specifically chosen, which I find very interesting. And not only that, she's actually a nice person. Like Rune talks about how nice and kind she is, and that even I think at one point even Bryce meets his mom, and Rune even says that his mom was like almost doting on Bryce. And I'm like, can we meet your mom? Hello?
Hello, can we, Rune, we'd like to meet your mother.
Can we just like forget dad?
We are take home to mom girls.
Yeah, take home to mom. One thing that also took me like for a complete just like blew my mind is Rune Danon is 75 years old.
Are you saying this because you think he should be younger or because you think he should be older?
Older. Like 75 is too real of a number.
He's just a baby.
But that's too real of a number. Like if he was like 575, like ideal. Yeah. Like 175 is like still almost like uncomfy, but like 300 and above, that's okay. But like strictly like 75 and just like,
just a boy.
He's just a boy, but
just a boy.
75 is too real. That's like too real. I'm all for age gap, but 75, like, too real. Yeah. Make it 300 and above.
300. He's going to get there eventually.
He will get there eventually, but for my sanity, he needs to get there faster.
That's fair. Yeah, I don't think I put a lot of thought into that, like his age.
I sure didn't. I don't even think I clocked it the first time I read the book that he was 75. I'm just like, oh, he's fey. He's old, but looks young. So it's fine.
I would like to know if it makes others uncomfortable. So if you're listening to this, does Rune Danon's age make you uncomfortable? Let us know.
Yes.
Should it be 300 or above? Is there a different age that you would like? Tell us. Let's put it to a vote.
Please.
I will make my decision when I hear everyone else's thoughts, because I don't have one. I don't know if it makes me uncomfortable.
Your don't got really high, so I feel like you do have one.
Maybe. I don't know. Let me think about it. It's classified. It needs to simmer a little bit. I need to like let it sink in a little bit, and then I'll let you guys know.
I feel like for the rest of the book, I was just like la 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 la, Rune 75, and then just like, just let it go off into the distance and forget about it.
Is that why he's still like, cause he like is, he parties a lot too. Like, is that why, do you think? Cause he's still like a young, he's still young.
I don't even know. Cause I that's also like, maybe that also has to do with him like having made the drop at 25. Like maybe he still has that young person mentality. Yeah. I don't know.
Again, if I made the drop, I would make it a 30. 30 is a good age for a drop.
30, flirty, and thriving is where I want to live at.
Drop at 30. Done. Set.
Anywho, after fixating on Rune's age, because, wow. we learn that, like, is Rune working for the Autumn King? Yes. However, the Autumn King is, like, holding information from Rune, such as Ruin is saying like, hey, big things are going down, and kind of gives him a little debrief of what he's learned with the case so far. Mm-hmm. And the Autumn King is like, yeah, I got a letter. And like, Briggs isn't the murderer. And Ruin's like, what do you mean? Were you going to say this when? But the Autumn King is like, his main priority right now is fixating on his little experiments. And specifically, he is looking and studying on how light moves through the world and how it changes shapes. Mm-hmm. And he specifically records it in the old forgotten language from the Northern Rift, which is very, very interesting. And we also get mentions of the old forgotten language quite a bit throughout the series.
Yeah, it's always something to keep your minds on.
Yeah, just keep your eye on that. But as Ruin is like trying to like do business, the Autumn King's like, hey, can I borrow some of your starlight? And Ruin's like, fine. And so he gives him a little bit of his starlight, puts it in a prism. Is Ruin Starborn Fae? Yes. However, his light source, very itty bitty. Mm-hmm. So he like has to dig through those shadows, pull out a little kernel. And holding and honing that light is not something he's great at. So he's only able to hold it for a little bit. And the Autumn King gets frustrated, which, boo you. Because he's also trash. Put him on the list with Cardin. Oh my God. But during this time, he gets frustrated. And then he also is like, murder case. Sure, but more like important kingly things is also telling Ruin like, hey, think it's about time that you get married and produce an heir. And Ruin's like, no, thank you. And the king brings up Ruin's oracle reading saying that Ruin is supposed to be a fair and just king, and him getting married is only going to put his oracle reading like faster into the future, make it more solidified. Mm-hmm. And so the king tells Ruin that there is a young witch whose mother died and she's supposed to be recognized as the new queen. And so Ruin is kind of, I guess, commanded in a way that he must marry this new queen witch in order to secure an alliance for a war that is happening across the continent. So from Dear Old Dad, Ruin's task is to get married, make sure Bryce doesn't get into any more trouble with this whole thing. And he also never refers to Bryce as Bryce. She's always that girl to Dear Old Dad. And he also wants Ruin to specifically find the horn. The horn, we learn, was actually a relic of Fae culture. And Ruin is very puzzled as to why the king would want this. And because he's like, it's been in this museum, it doesn't work, it doesn't do anything. And Dad says that it's essentially a symbol, and symbols have power of their own. So he wants Ruin to find this, and he thinks that Ruin will be able to find it because the horn once belonged to Peleos, who was the first Starborn prince. And he says a line that is very, very familiar in the SJM verse, and that is, you will see that like calls to like.
Yes. That one right there is important. Peleos is important. Calls to like. I don't think I've ever met anybody that has started the Massverse with Crescent City, but if you are, that's okay. You do you, boo. But yes, like calls to like.
Because I know for sure it's in this series. Mm-hmm. I can't recall if it's in Throneglass or not. It has to be. But I can't think of like a specific instance. But Dear Old Dad says that, and Ruin is about to leave. So again, Dad, make sure Bryce is out of trouble, find the horn, and you're going to get married because this solidifies your reading that you're going to be a fair and just king. However, Ruin lets it slip that that is just a fake reading that he gave his dad, because his real reading that we do not know the true meaning of is that the oracle told him that the royal bloodline will end with you. And that is where the chapter ends, on that very big cliffhanger.
The royal bloodline will end with you.
What do you mean?
If you did the audiobook, it's kind of a creepy line. Honestly, like the way that she says it. She's like, it's very ominous. Line will end with you. So gravelly. Yes. So sketchy. Yes. King Autumn has no idea what's really happening. He thinks that he does. He does not. So that kind of wraps up chapter 14. With chapter 15, we're back with Bryce, right? So Bryce is trying to settle in and take a moment to relax at home in her apartment. We learn that Juniper and Fury both now know about Philip Briggs' innocence in the Pax murders. They are not aware, though, that Bryce has any involvement in this case. She mentions that both of her friends have, again, been less than present since the Pax passing, which we kind of noted earlier, but that still has not changed. As she looks outside and notes her surroundings after Syrinx begged to go outside, we see a large angel on the opposite rooftop looking broody as ever. Hunt Athalar sat atop that roof as an order from the governor for protection duty to keep Bryce safe. Bryce, however, does not believe that this was true and that she is still more of a suspect than anything else, right? It's like he's more to like keep an eye on her. Side note, Syrinx is the most dramatic character in this entire series. He's so dramatic. Interesting. Like, during this chapter, like, and I say that, and I know Lahaba, but I say this because he, in this scene that, like, when they're rereading it through, he's, like, scratching at the glass, and he's huffing and puffing around, because she's like, you just went for a walk, bro. You just went outside, and he's like, me. And he, like, sits on the couch and, like, puffs down. Like, he's so dramatic.
I mean, I feel like that's just classic dog behavior. Because, like, even my dog, like, I'll have taken him out. And then I just think he's almost spoiled. Because I feel like Bryce would spoil him.
Because, sure.
Like, my dog, he will, like, sit at the door and whine. And, like, it's just like one of those screen doors so he can see outside and he will whine until you open the door. I'm like, you really just wanted like the wind on your face? Is this really necessary? And he'll just like look at me or he'll whine to go outside and I'll let him outside and he'll take like literally 2 steps and sit and just lift his head and close his eyes. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
That's so dramatic though, right? Like, I will die on this hill.
I think it's just because it's a product of being spoiled.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Syrinx the whole time. So dramatic. So as Bryce closes the curtains now that she had previously opened, she gets a text from Hunt telling her to open the curtains because the Angel of Death wants to watch TV. He's bored up there, okay? He wants to watch Sunball, but the dating show that is on the screen will do for now. I cackled at this. She notes to herself that Hunt is, again, not there by choice. He is a slave, and he has to listen to whatever order he is given, right? As all slaves do. So she asks how he even got her number in the first place. He was like, it was in your file. Okay, sure. We, again, kind of switch over because she's like, well, did you talk to Rune yet, like, about anything? She kind of changes the subject, right? So we learn that the angels did go to Rune and double-check the alibi, which is ridiculous because they have all the camera footage. They know exactly what happened. So I don't know what they were doing, but I guess that's just part of being the angel police. They have to like check all the boxes. So in this chapter, it is one of the first times that Hunt calls her sweetheart. And we all cringe during this moment, including what? Bryce, because it's not like sweetheart. It's like, okay, sweetheart. Like, he says it in such a condescending.
I don't care.
Spilled
and giggled.
Bryce is like, absolutely not. And I was like, yeah, girl, absolutely not.
No, I was there for it.
Absolutely not. No. He's saying it to be mean. Like, all right, sweetheart. Like, I was like, no, I'm with you, Bryce. Okay, maybe everybody except for Madison. So during this time in the apartment, both Hunt and Bryce get snippy with each other, like texting each other back and forth, being like so rude to each other, right? And Bryce reminds Hunt that she was asked to head this case up and that he is technically the backup. LOL. Hello, Umbra Mortis, Shadow of Death. You're literally my backup. Relax. So as Bryce goes to open up the curtains once again to look at Hunt across the way, Hunt notes Syrinx, right, the Chimera, and her apartment, both a very high value. In this moment, we are looking at it from, again, Hunt's perspective, the rich party girl who doesn't care about anything or anyone. But keep these little details in mind because these will come up at a later date. So I'm not going to tell you why, but just know that it's there. So she now has Hunt's phone number, right? And he tells her to call if she's in danger or needs something, like a pizza. And he flips her off because he's like, call me if you need me. And she's like, you could be a pizza delivery boy. And he straight gives her the middle finger. So the two are still texting. Oh, it was so funny, though. So worth it. The two are still texting each other with level 10 sass. And Bryce dares to tell the Umbra Mortis, kindly fly the fuck off. And then he leaves the roof across the street and flies right to her balcony. Girl is like, what do you want, bro? And as they're arguing, she mentions that she tastes ether in the air. This is not the first time we will hear this, right? So, and I was like, what does that mean? Because if not everybody knows what ether is, okay? I really didn't. I was like, I feel like I've heard the word before, but I didn't actually understand what that meant. So I looked it up. Here we go. Good old internet says it is a pleasant smelling, colorless, volatile liquid that is highly flammable. It is used as an anesthetic or a solvent in the industrial process. So it smells sweet, it's volatile, it's flammable. As opposed to like chloroform, right, which is another chemical that when I was looking up and like researching it, kind of compared it to a little bit, which is also somewhat sweet smelling and volatile, but not flammable. So when Hunt gets like amped up, right, with his lightning powers, he kind of gives off a little bit of like ether in the air.
So, just imagine seeing someone looking at your search history, like, why is she looking at ether and chloroform? I
know, I'm on a list somewhere. Hello? She's looking up ether or chloroform. Lots of fun things. Okay. You know, authors have this problem all the time, especially like dark romance authors. Like, they're looking all this stuff up, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're all on a list somewhere. I'm on the list with them. It's probably fine. No big deal. I needed to know. Okay, that's what the internet's for. It's for me to ask my weird questions. So, again, the banter is still continuing. And then Bryce shuts the window in his face where Hunt's intrusive thoughts, he considers throwing her into the Istros River. This holy serious killer had never had to deal with someone who isn't scared of him, right? Nonetheless, has the balls to sass him. So, I love Bryce so much. She is genuinely one of my favorite FMCs. Like, truly. So, I relate to her a lot because my toxic trait is I also like sassing men who are much larger than I am, right? Like 6'4", I'm in your face. I'll stand up on a chair. I'm on a stool. I don't care. I'll be like right in there.
I feel like I'm unintentionally sassy to where I don't realize it. And then people call me out. I'm like, I didn't think I was, but I do lean into a lot of sarcasm. But there, I feel like there's a time and a place whenever she like closed the curtains and he's like, oh, open them because I want to watch TV. And she's like, bro. No, I'm like, give the dude a bone or something. Like, he's literally bored out of his mind. Like, that's not going to kill anyone.
He has a phone. He can look at his phone.
But then that like distracts from his mission of watching her.
That's not her problem. That's not a Bryce problem. That's a Hunt problem.
Oh my gosh.
I love Hunt. I do. I know. But at this point, he does not deserve to watch TV. He has been mean to her. He'd be rude.
How is he being rude?
He's been sassy with her. And she knows that he doesn't want to be there, right? He knows. Like, she knows. It's not like, oh, thank you for protecting me. She's like, I don't need protection. Like, I don't need you here, right? Like, Bryce is not like, oh my gosh, help me, right? Like, they're both being forced to be in this situation. So,
Hunt, if you're watching, I would have let you watch TV. Watch all the Sunball you want.
Watch all the – here's a TV. Let me bring it over there for you.
Here's the guide.
Oh, my gosh. So, Hunt's really upset, right? He calls Isaiah, where we learn he is now on Samson Street.
This girl's being mean to me.
Yes, exactly. And he's like, why are you on Samson Street, first of all? Because the cameras and trackers are everywhere, right? Someone always knows where everybody is, especially him. So these cameras, it's noted, are bomb-proof. So keep that in mind as well. Nothing is going to destroy these cameras. Hunt informs Isaiah that chimeras are legit amazing because they can pick locks, teleport, and go through walls and open doors. So Syrinx is like doing his own thing. He assumed that Bryce does not know any of this either, because Hunt learned this happens because Syrinx appeared next to him across the street, bit him in the ass, and because he was falling asleep, and then disappeared back into the apartment. And Bryce opens the curtain just in time to see him grabbing his ass. So when he flew over to tell her what happened, she ignored him and turned up her music. LOL.
Poor man.
Rolling on the floor.
He's like
flying over to be like, what? And she's like, no.
This man is just trying to do his job.
And Syrinx is probably just like dying in the background, which is why I think Syrinx is the most dramatic character. Like, Syrinx is underrated.
Oh, for sure.
Hilarious. So Syrinx is one, oh, it's considered a lower, right? So the lower is when Syrinx and his kind are all part of, like, they all have special, like, powers or odd powers, things like that. This is what gives them such a high value at the markets. This is also why every time someone tried to change the laws to give them some sort of rights or freedom, it's always shut down. The lowers will forever be born and known immediately as property only. They were too dangerous, and if it left unchecked, something could happen. And they're also super lucrative to richer families, so they profited off of them. This has nothing to do with anything at all, this next side note that I have. I just felt the need to say it on air, is that during this chapter, it literally is not important. I just think it's so weird and funny, is that you have like these wolf shifters, right? And these like, you have like these big angels and all these things. And then there is a family of quail shifters crossing the road.
That's cute.
And I just imagine like this big city and like all these like big, crazy, scary things. And this like little family of quail shifters just like, like if you've ever seen it, like a flock of quail, I don't know, flock or whatever, of quail crossing the street or crossing, they're adorable.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen a quail, but where I live, we live near the woods, so we'll always hear, like, the Bob White quails, and they have, like, a really specific, like, whistle that you can mimic, and so every now and then, me and my dad will make the whistle, and they'll respond to us, so, like, we try to get them to come closer, because I've never seen a quail, but he has, and he just looks so cute and tiny.
Yeah, and it depends what, like, breed of quail it is. Like, where I'm from originally, like, the quail are, like, so, so small. And they run, like, so close together, and they just, like, zoom across the street so fast. Like, da-da-da-da-da. And so I just imagine this, like, little tiny quail family. Oh, also, side note to last week, the question was posted, like, if you were a shifter, what kind of, what would you be? I figured out what I want to be.
Quail?
No, not that. As adorable as that is. I want to be a house cat.
Okay.
Not like a big cat. Not like a mountain lion or like – I just would like to be a house cat.
I wouldn't have a mountain lion in my house, so.
Yeah, I think that being a house cat is my dream. I thought about it for a long time because I could go to whatever house I wanted, right? And just be like, adopt me. And then live there. And then if you – especially like in this day and age, a millennial, they take care of their animals. I would be treated so well. I would be fed the best food. I would have all the cat houses that I could ever dream of. I could nap all day. And then when I want to, I would just leave and shift back to my human form and go on my way.
Oh, who does that remind me of?
That's my dream.
Like, there's an obvious answer, but there's someone else I'm thinking of. Oh, it kind of reminds me of Binks in Hocus Pocus.
Yes. Yes, Binks energy for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am domestic house cat. That is me. That's what I want to be.
Turn me into one of those fat domestic house cats and you'll be happy about it.
Or like Salem from like Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Yeah, so sassy.
Where I just like rule the house in my cat form. Yes, amazing. So Isaiah asks Hunt exactly why he is calling, since there is nothing legit wrong. He is just calling to bitch about Bryce and he's losing his patience. I can only imagine what Isaiah's face looks like on the other end of this call. He is trying so hard not to laugh because the shadow of death is literally calling to bitch about a girl for the first time ever, right? So he does call him out that he is only mad because Bryce isn't cowarding. He's like, you are used to people like kneeling before you essentially or like running away from you. He also reminds him that he literally survived arenas that Sandriel put him in. He can handle Bryce.
But could you imagine, like, being put on watch 24 hours and all you want to do is just, like, have a little crumb of television and she's just like, nope.
No.
Ugh.
I probably would have said no, too.
And again, if, like, you're watching, I'll let you watch TV.
I would not let you watch TV. I'd be like, no, you're fine.
K-pop Demon Hunters together, you'll love it.
Oh my gosh. So Hunt is now being forced to sit outside a nail salon and watch Bryce get her nails done, which explains why he is on Samson Street. He is convinced that she had something to do with all these murders now, right? Or knows more than she is saying, but doesn't know what. We know that Bryce is with a Drakki female who is doing her nails. And the just a reminder that the Drakkis are in House of Flame and Shadow. So, side note, we learn that Drakki and Fae could use element-based magic, but not one of them bore lightning, and there was no one around when Hunt was younger to teach him how to use his powers. So, he ended up teaching himself. This is an Easter egg. This is foreshadowing. Not one other thing around Hunt when he was growing up had the same powers as him.
You want to know something very random? Another side note.
Yes.
I feel like he would make such a good teacher to Violet.
Oh my god, how cute would that be?
He'd be the best teacher.
Yes, he would. He would. I don't know if Zayden would let it happen, but yes.
I mean, I feel like they'd have a mutual, respectful understanding, but still, Zayden for sure would have, like, the jealous... Well, no. Ooh. I want to say a thing, but I don't want to spoil anything.
Don't spoil it. No spoilers here.
I feel like Zayden would know deep in his soul that Hunt would never have any sort of other ulterior motives.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to let that sit there.
Just put that little piece of crumb on there. So Hunt reminds Bryce that she is not following orders, right? And she does not care about this investigation and her priorities are not straight. He demands the two lists again that he had previously requested, the one with the suspects and the previous places that Danica went before her death. He does try a scare tactic at this point, right? That if people see her not caring about this investigation, that it might look like she's impeding it. She shuts the door on his face at the gallery and we finally get to know our glorious fire sprite, Lahaba. I am a die-hard Lahaba number one fan. If you've listened to our, like our Quicksilver deep dive, like, you know my love for fire sprites. But my love for fire sprites starts with this one right here. Okay? Lahaba loves Hunt because he's so handsome. And she doesn't understand why Bryce won't just let him in the door. And he can rest. She's like, he can rest on the couch and be out of the rain. And Lahaba notes that Syrinx said Hunt can brush his coat if he needs something to do. In this right now, Lahaba is the only one that can talk to Syrinx. Nowhere in the series does it say the someone else able to communicate with Syrinx besides Lahaba. I just want that to be out there. Bryce also has a nickname for Lahaba. They have nicknames for each other. So Lahaba is Lily, and then Bryce is Bibi.
Which I still, I don't know. Like, I love Lily, but I'm just like, Lahaba, it's still, like, to me, it doesn't flow as well.
Lily.
Yeah, Lily with, like, the spelling enunciation. But I feel like nicknames usually come from, like, a portion of a name, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. They rhyme. Lily and BB.
Lily and BB, the best of buds.
Yes. So our Lily tells Bryce that one day Jessica will sell her to some creep and she will regret denying her anything. And as she pouts on a candlestick, we learn that she was stamped with the slave stamp at birth. S-P-Q-M. Every sprite was. Fire, water, or earth. Doesn't matter. This was the punishment for joining the rebellion. The sprite's punishment went further, though. Every sprite in the rebellion, and even the ones who did not join, would be enslaved and thrown out of the House of Sky and Breath. all of the future sprites would be this way as well. It is noted also that Lahaba's power was greater than Bryce's, but still small compared to like a Fae's flames, like her father's flames, right? The Autumn King. She wants Bryce to purchase her so that way she can live in her apartment. And even if she asks Jessica, she knows that Jessica would sell her to a terrible person just because she asks, right? Just because she brought it up. So we then have a full circle moment where we realize that Jessica let Bryce buy Syrinx because she was going through a lot in that moment, right? Obviously, because the last 2 years have been rough. And the thought of her selling him to someone else made her lose it. So it brings us kind of full circle to that moment where Hunt's like, well, that's a nice, like, lower animal you got there. You paid a lot of money for that. And she's like, yeah, I sure did. But, like, he doesn't know that there's a reason for that, right? So Lily likes Hunt also because he led her people into battle and is a part of her house. She is reminded that she got kicked out of her house, but Lily says that being a part of a house is more than just what the government says, right? Being a part of a house is in your soul. It's in your heart. Immediately, a book falls off the shelf as if it was literally running away, and Lahaba hissed at it and it got back on the shelf. And I love that for her. She's amazing. We also learn that Jessica is always watching the gallery in the video footage, and she reminds Bryce to stop letting the fire sprite lounge around and that she needs to get back to work.
Always but watching was out.
She's got those. Yeah, exactly. Always watching. She's got those books in check, though, so I don't know. But Jessica always watching the gallery is also something important to know about. So keep that one in your brain as well. It is noted that the library downstairs has more than just books. It has glass tanks full of turtles, snakes, rodents, and other fun creatures. Are they all people who made Jessica upset? I don't know. However, Lahaba names them all. Nutmeg and Ginger and Miss Poppy. However, the one thing she did not name was the Kelpie that lived in the large tank of water behind them, which was very quickly gifted to another client because it was terrifying. So now the tank sits empty, thankfully. Just before this chapter is wrapped up, we learn that Bryce is hiding something very big and has something planned that is going to seriously piss off our Shadow of Death. But the look on his face will be 100% worth it. End chapter 15.
Oh my gosh. Just let my boy watch some TV.
He does not get to watch TV. No TV for you.
One day, Hunt. One day.
One day.
Anywho, we go back to Mr. the Crown Prince of the Valvarin Fae, which I didn't realize how much they specifically say Ruin Danon, Crown Prince of the Valvarin Fae, until I did my reread. I'm like, I get it. Thank you. Yes, I love see. It. I see.
Say it every single chapter.
Because the beginning of this chapter reminded me of another chapter, the way that it's like set up. I was like, hang on, but it's not that chapter.
It's not the one. We will get there. Not yet.
Such a good chapter.
It's so good. Okay. You guys will know soon. Don't worry.
Focus. So Ruin is in his room listening to music, getting high on mirth through as any emo kid does.
75 years old.
A 75-year-old emo kid. Probably listening to some My Chemical Romance or Pierce the Veil.
The elder millennial, A Day to Remember.
I love him so much. You want to know something so bad?
Yes.
So Ruin is painted as – it's the hair that I think triggered this for me. So he's painted as having like this long black hair but shaved on one side, yes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It took me forever. God bless illustrators who make fan art because it like helps me see him in a different light. But whenever I first started reading, for whatever reason, if you've ever seen the movie Coco and Miguel is in the world of the dead and he's doing their competition, there is a specific emo boy that has like the same exact hair as Rune. And for whatever reason, I could only picture Rune as like this lanky little emo boy instead of like this strong, muscular man that he is. You have to look up a photo. It is hilarious.
I'm literally looking it up right now. Oh my God, I forgot about that.
That was all I could picture him as, is like not this buff Fae warrior, but no. Like this lanky emo kid.
Absolutely not.
I told my friend that. She's like, you need to cut it out. So
for reference, we're going to save this photo. It's going to go in the show notes. Everyone else needs to see this monstrosity that she is comparing him
to. Listen, since then, I have been thoroughly educated by illustrators and fan art creators, and I've learned more about Rune Danon.
No.
And many other things, to where now I see him in the light that he should have been seen in the first place. But I did think of him as a little emo kid.
That's so funny and terrible at the same time. That's so cringe.
Fun fact.
Okay. Yeah, that photo will be in the show notes. You guys can all see and then make fun of Madison with me.
I welcome it. You know what? Be ruthless. I don't care. We're hanging out with our little emo boy in his room.
Yes, our emo boy listening to music. Let's go.
He's jamming out, listening to Black Parade when he was a young boy, his father, all that jazz. And he is just vibing. And then all of a sudden, he smells a smelly smell that happens to be a familiar smell. And he opens his eyes. And what do you know? Bryce is there. And he was like, what? And she's like, you need to turn down your music, little emo boy. So Bryce is visiting Rune, and she wants to ask him questions, but she sees the state that he's in, and she's like, okay, come with me. Like, you need water, because I'm not dealing with you like this. So once we leave Rune's room, we go downstairs to where we meet his roommates. So his roommates do not know that Bryce and Rune are half siblings. They think that they are cousins, just like majority of the world. But we have Declan Emmett. He is a hacker for the Republic, and he hacks mm-hmm. into websites and essentially forces them to reveal their secrets. I forgot about him for like a little bit and what he did, but I was like, oh wait, I like this kid. Never mind.
We love Declan.
But I'm so interested in the other roommate, who is Tristan Flynn. He has a little bit of a lineage to him, to where he is the son of Lord Hawthorne. And he has a little bit of earth magic, mm-hmm. which is very, very rare among the fire-prone Valbaran Fae. And he essentially has a little bit of a history with Bryce. Mm-hmm. He constantly flirts with him. And we learn in later chapters that, like, sometimes Bryce would just, you know what, humor a little bit. I love Tristan Flynn so much. And I can't wait for you all to learn about him in future books.
Yeah, he's a great character. Honestly, both of them, like Declan and Tristan, are like solid characters the mm-hmm. whole time. So remember their names, remember who they are, because they are very important.
Mm-hmm. But to me, out of the two of them, Tristan Flynn just has that sort of je ne sais quoi to him.
Oh my God.
Hello, that's a book. I got too worked up. But essentially, Declan and Tristan are to Rune, kind of like what Azriel and Cassian are to Rhysand. So mm-hmm. they have this close bond growing up. They all trained together. They did the ordeal together, which was mm-hmm. a very bonding experience for them because they almost died during it.
Yeah.
They also acted as each other's anchors doing the drop. But as they are talking and Bryce is having Rune kind of sober up a little bit so they can have a serious adult conversation, Bryce asks Declan to get her information on the Viper Queen, since Maximus Tertian was murdered on the Viper Queen's turf, which is the meat market.
Mm-hmm.
So Bryce has him do that, and Rune is everyone's kind of like, why are you wanting this information? And she says that the governor commissioned her to find the murderer. And with that information, Rune still is kind of like, don't mess with this. And Bryce is like, this is kind of my job right now, so deal with it. But Rune shares that the Viper Queen pulled her people that night before the murder happened because something spooked her. And we don't know what it was. But for something to spook the Viper Queen, that is a big deal because homegirl is not scared of anything. Rune also warns Bryce to not take off the Arkizan amulet if she is going into this business with the Viper Queen, just like Danica did. I thought that was very, very notable.
Mm-hmm, yeah, it is.
But as they're having the little talk, Rune is still like kind of against it, not wanting Bryce to do any of these dangerous things. And as Bryce is leaving, Rune clocks Mr. Hunt Athalar waiting for her. And he was like, hold up. So he goes out to confront Hunt. And I thought it was hilarious to learn that they had a history together.
Oh, my God.
And the fact that Rune and Hunt fought at Micah's spring equinox party to the point to where Hunt broke some of her... No, it was Rune who broke some of Hunt's ribs.
Yeah.
And Hunt broke Rune's nose.
Yep.
And I was like, wow. It's funny.
Just a little fist fight.
boys will be boys.
Our two favorite boys. Duking it out. Hunt won, though.
Did he? I didn't think it was like this. I mean.
It was kind of even, but like I think Hunt won that.
It looked
he did such a good job that Micah like forgave him.
That's true.
Micah was
Yeah.
If he would have lost, like if he would have gotten his ass kicked, I think it would have been different, right? Like you embarrass me. But because like I think he fought better than Rune in the moment, he chose not to punish him. So that tells me that Hunt won that fight.
Yeah, which I'm also intrigued as to why Micah didn't punish him, like even just like a little slap on the wrist, because it's still a fight, you know.
Yeah, I get it. I don't know. I think if he would have lost or if he would have looked bad in any way, it would have been different. But I think because like they were like, oh, the Umber Mortis, like just put the crown prince of the Balvar and Fae in his place.
Yeah.
Micah was like, fine. I guess I won't do anything this time. Yeah. Like I won't kill you. So congrats.
That's a big win.
You can live another day. For real.
But the way that this chapter ends, it ends on a really interesting quote. And again, this is all from Rune's perspective. Mm-hmm. But the quote is, could it be a coincidence that the murders were starting again at the same time his father had given orders to find an object that had gone missing a week before Danica's death? It felt odd, like Erd was whispering, nudging them all. Rune planned to find out why, starting with finding that horn. And the reason why this was so interesting to me is because if you've read Throne of Glass, there are two characters I think of immediately whenever I think of gods and their influences on people. Mm-hmm. And throughout that story, they are constantly referring to a certain god that they think either represents them or is like specifically watching over them. So the fact that Rune says it feels like Erd is whispering and nudging them, I'm like, that's very interesting information.
I agree. That is interesting information. And for those who do not remember, Erd is an ancient, powerful entity often described as a force of fate or destiny. They are considered more primal than Luna. And Luna, again, is the patron goddess of Lunathian, now known as Crescent City, and the moon goddess of Midgard. So that's kind of a reference of like who those ones are if you forgot. So no, I agree. I think that's definitely like an interesting thing that maybe we will come back to later at a different point in time.
Probably. I honestly can't remember. It's been so long since I've read these books the first time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So chapter 17, Bryce and Hunt are walking. Bryce hands a piece of paper to Hunt with a list of suspects, but quickly snaps it back. She doesn't let him have it for very long. She makes a snide remark that she would have given him this list sooner, but he was too busy assuming things about her and that she didn't care about this case because she was getting her nails done instead of investigating, which is why Hunt does not get to watch TV right now.
R.I.P.
He has to earn the TV. He was mean. However, Bryce informs Hunt that she looked into Maximus Tertian, who again was the guy who was murdered, the vampire who was murdered outside of the meat market, and doesn't believe like him and Danica knew each other. Right? She's like, I looked into it and I don't think they know each other. And the reason why she knows this is because she looked him up on a dating site and saw that he was in a relationship with a Drachi female, a nail technician who happened to work at a salon on Samson Street.
Wow.
Hunt Athalar. So our nail tech that we went and got our nails done with is devastated at the loss of her rich boyfriend. She didn't know anything about the investigation, but she knows that the 33rd did speak to her for a moment. It's so odd that Hunt did not know this.
I think it's odd that the 33rd don't know a lot of things that Bryce has I was to like, find out.
Yeah, I was like, you guys literally spoke to her. You know, like, how do you not know what you got Bryce's phone number out of the file, supposedly? Why did you not look and see that you guys did an interview with the girlfriend of the murder suspect? Come on,
yeah, police force. Sometimes I feel like they're not using their brain, because especially when things be thinking and we learn information and because like reading this the second time, I know the things, but I'm like trying to piece the information as like, oh, maybe I missed this Easter egg, or like, oh yeah, this points to this. But like the very end, honestly, I forgot about an important thing, but I was just like, and you guys didn't think to check this? Like,
yeah,
stupid.
Hello.
Are you sure you're a police force? Is this first day?
It was wild. I was like, what do you mean? The 33rd literally did an interview with her and he's like, did not know. And so when Bryce mentions Danica to the nail tech, she knows for sure that Maximus was not friends with Danica, because the girlfriend's like, he would have bragged about that to everybody. Like, Danica was too important. Everybody knows who Danica is, right? So the only common thing that they had was one person, the Viper Queen, right? Leader of the meat market. And that's who gets her nails done on Sundays. Dun, dun, dun. So Danica's job in the Ox made her a contact with the Viper Queen. And we know, again, that the Viper Queen pulled her people in the night before. So she could be a major suspect for sure. She's like on the list. Hunt wants to set up an official meeting with the Queen, but she plays by her own rules. So the odds of getting a meeting, like an official meeting, is going to take a long time, right? We then kind of go back a little bit to the previous chapter where of Rune, and when Bryce told him all these things, she knows he can't help but tell the Autumn King, again, their father, about all of it, right? And how the Autumn King reacts will tell them where he lands in this investigation. She doesn't think, like, Bryce doesn't think he's a suspect, but he did tell her to stay out of trouble the night of Maximus's murder, and he would do anything to protect his crown and his power. So he is on the list, but it will tell us whether or not he should stay on that list when he reacts to Rune. So they go their separate ways at her apartment, and then Bryce then arms herself with a knife and something bigger on her person. She left the lights and TV on, and the curtains like closed just enough to not see the front door, and she sneaks out of the rear stairwell. She gets on her scooter and drives into traffic, leaving Hunt on the rooftop across. I rolled my eyes so hard at this, because she then arrives at a warehouse where some sketchy things are happening, right? Right outside of the meat market, again, where the Viper Queen is in charge of. Just as she parks and gets off her scooter, the Umbra Mortis slams down next to her with full force, scaring everyone around them, and proceeds to tell Bryce he is going to fucking kill her. She knows. He can smell her. There's scent everywhere. There is no sneaking around. There's no sneaky. Unless you rub mud all over yourself. And he's going to smell mud and be like, what is that? Like, girl, you're not going anywhere. It killed me.
Yeah.
I laugh. But that, what a good ending to chapter 17, though. Like, he's like, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Whenever he found out that she snuck out, I was like, my man's just trying to do his job.
I know. He probably rolled his eyes, too. He's like, oh, my God, here we go.
I feel like Bryce literally just sits in her apartment. She's like, how can I make this simple task even more difficult?
Yes. How can I upset Hunt Athelard today.
Or not even today. Just how can I upset him within this hour?
It's been an hour. He seems pretty content. Let me do something dumb.
He seems too comfortable. Let's fix that.
And that's why she is my girl.
Oh yes. Oh my gosh.
I'm 100% here for it. Ugh.
We're in the meat market with Bryce and Hunt. Bless him. And this is through Hunt's perspective, which I enjoyed getting his perspective. I like whenever stories give multiple perspectives.
Yes.
It's very refreshing.
Mm-hmm. She did a great job with it too. Like, it's an easy, for me, at least it's an easy transition of like, now we're in Rune's mind and now we're in Bryce's mind and now we're in Hunt's mind. So like, I like that we get the different, instead of like a whole chapter of like, now we're through, like, you know, point of previews. I like that we can just, she just easily glides back and forth.
Yeah. So we're in the meat market. We're with Bryce. We're with Hunt. It's through his perspective, which is really, really fun. And Hunt is painting a beautiful meat market's not beautiful, but he's painting a picture for us of what everything looks like. He's taking notes of all the vendors. One thing in specific he takes note of is there is a mosaic in town that is depicting a Panjira temple with Death holding an hourglass in one hand and a scythe, I believe it's called, in the other, with above it reading Memento Mori, which essentially translates to remember you will die. So they kind of lived by this motto in the meat market because they're like, doing illegal things doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You're gonna die anyway, so who cares? Backstabbing people doesn't matter. I'll see you later. So this is like their motto, if you will. But Bryce apparently has unknown history with the meat market that Hunt does not know of until now. So as they're walking, Bryce is kind of cataloging and breaking things down for Hunt. She points out a metal worker that Bryce has a history with, and that metal worker will actually ID artifacts for her, letting her know if something is authentic or not. And there's also a fruit lady that carries Syrinx's favorite food, which I thought was very, very cute.
Thank you, fruit lady.
Thank you, fruit lady. For making Syrinx happy. And see, it's because of his favorite food that Bryce buys, which is why Syrinx is so high maintenance and bossy. Yes.
High maintenance dog cat line pug thing.
But eventually, whenever they're walking through the meat market, Bryce walks into a warehouse of a building to specifically seek out this salt vendor. And again, Hunt is taking catalog of everything, especially all of the different salts that are being offered. So he mentions the different colors. There is white that is used for purification, pink that is used for protection, red, he doesn't remember, therefore we don't know what red means. And then there is the black salt, which is summoning. And so people can buy black salts, which is very, very illegal, very, very no-no. But you know what? Memento Mori. And black salt can essentially be used to summon any creatures or demons from different rifts. And Hunt really doesn't like this salt because that is his job. Hunt's job is to go out and take care of demons that break through these rifts. Not gonna lie, whenever I read this chapter, like, Bryce is girl bossing, she's getting the things done, but I almost felt sorry for the vendor because, like, dang, she's going in hard and just tearing this guy apart.
But also, he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't sell anything, which, like, fair, right? You literally have someone from the 33rd behind her. And she's like, yes, you do. Like, she knows exactly what she's doing. She's incredibly intelligent. She's very smart. And every time that we get a little bit further into this book, like, Hunt's like, oh my God, this girl kind of knows what she's doing. Just a little bit. Right?
Listen, in this moment, it's that clip that's been going around where it's like, you don't understand that I'm clocking on business. Bryce is clocking on business.
Is that what it says?
Yeah.
Who is that? That's Justin Bieber?
Yeah. Because I've seen people use it talking about Kale and Selena. Because Kale's like, you're an assassin and you kill people. And she's like, that's the job. Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like Justin Bieber, but Selena's perspective. And it's like, you don't understand, I'm clocking on business.
Wild. So,
Bryce, she do be clocking on business.
She got business.
She is really going in with this guy, being like, I need black salt, 7 pounds, I think 7 ounces as well. No more, no less.
The lucky number.
And the poor little, it's not a centaur, but he's some sort of, he has a little bit of goat in him. But he's just like, he's quaking in his boots. And he's like, I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. And Bryce is like, you know what? I'm not only here for me, but I'm here for Jezebah. And if you don't give Jezebah what she needs, I got some friends that are coming in and they'll get what I need for me. And he's still like being like, I don't have it. And homeboy is sweating at this point. And meanwhile, Bryce is showing Hunt photos of puppies that her cousin got. And eventually this vendor cracks and he's like, fine, I'll get you the salt. So he gives her the salt. It's a little bit more than what Bryce is asking for. But he's like, you know what? Just take it. Just get out of my hair. Leave me alone. Don't tell anyone that I sold it to you. But we also learn in this area as well, whenever Bryce is pushing him about this salt that he doesn't have, she also calls him out for also being the seller who sold the salt to Philip Briggs, who was planning to blow up the White Raven. So essentially, Bryce does buy the salt. Hunt is really perplexed as to why she is buying the salt. And he's like, guess I'll find out later. But you know what? Later never comes, because as soon as they walk out that door, got a Viper Queen waiting for them right there.
Salt in bag.
She's like, not on my watch.
Yeah. Wild. Yeah. Viper Queen is waiting for them right outside. So that kind of wraps up chapter 18. Into chapter 19, we are in the same scene, right? So Bryce, with her bag on her shoulder, surveyed the queen in front of her. Sharp white teeth and snake-like eyes with purple lips. She mentions, like the Viper Queen mentions, that Hunt is a nice bodyguard. But Bryce mentions that he is all bronze and no brains.
Rude.
LOL. She knew who he was, though, right? Like, his story that he – but she knew him as the General Hunt Athalar from the Rebellion, not necessarily the Umbra Mortis Shadow of Death or the slave to Micah. It is mentioned that the queen has 4 guards of her own here. Faye, who defected out of her father's court, again, the Autumn King and the Five Roses, who specialize in weapons and in venoms slash poisons. So the queen notes the salt in Bryce's possession. She could taste the air, the salt's in the bag, and she could also taste fear. She mentions that she heard about them both going around town, but tells, like, Hunt tells her it's classified. He's like, I can't tell you anything. They do attempt to leave, but a guard steps in front of Bryce. He really wasn't there, though, like, because, like, mentally he wasn't there because he is addicted to the queen's venom, okay? This will be important in upcoming books, so please keep this info in your mind. Like, the queen gives out a venom that when you take it, you become addicted to it. The Viper Queen mentions things are getting interesting with the summit coming up and invites them over to her office. Just as Hunt is about to say no, Bryce heads right that direction. She's like, great, let's go. Hunt realizes then that she only bought this salt because it would get the queen's attention, because they did not have weeks to wait for a meeting that may or may not happen. And again, Bryce shines above all, and people need to stop assuming stuff about her, Hunt included. So just as we expect a beautiful office with lush furniture, we see a really gross, bland office with broken furniture, peeling paint, boxes everywhere, okay? This office is like trashed. The Viper Queen, leader of the meat market, spent her time in this hallow space. It was not what they expected, right? Her power then, the Viper Queen's power, is explained finally, sort of. Her snake shift is a moon-white cobra with scales that gleamed like opals. Her power was different. Mixed with her venom, it was strange and old. She knew that Danica and the relationship was a working one, right? To get things done, the 33rd and the Ox have to work with those in the shadows. It's just a part of the job. She also notes that Maximus Tertian was an idiot, basically, but she would not be stupid enough to mess with him because of who his father was. If you guys remember back in other episodes, like, his father was a really powerful lord, of like a vampire lord. She can also taste in the air when things are getting bad, like a bad energy in the air. And that's why she said she pulled her people in. She had like had a bad feeling. She has no idea who killed him, but she was probably, she's like, he was probably showing up for drugs. She's like, this happens sometimes, right? Like, he was kind of a bad guy. But it's also noted that there was no drugs in his system. So she's like, I don't know what happened to him then. She then hands over a flash drive to Hunt with two alibis on it. One for the night of Maximus's murder, she was at the spa, and the second one with the Pax murder, where she was at a 3-day orgy drop party. Good for you, girl. Ew. You do you. And Hunt's like, I don't want to watch this. He's like, I'll just take your word for it. So she gives them a pretty big piece of advice for their investigation. She says, look to where it hurts the most. That's always where the answers are. As they are escorted out of the meat market, the flash drive and salt in tow, she says, don't underestimate the obsidian salt. It can bring out the worst from hell. Hunt, again, believes her alibi and doesn't think she has anything to do with it, but notes in his mind that Jessica and Bryce are still suspects. So, like, as they're walking away, he's like, all right, like, I believe her, but, like, Jessica and Bryce are still, like, kind of high up on the list. Bryce, we know, has a lot of thinking to do tomorrow because now she kind of has a direction to go in as far as where this case is going, right? So Hunt attempts to ask for the salt, but for now it's for Bryce's burgers. He's like, what is this salt for? She's like, to season my burgers, bro. Love her. Keep that in mind too. That's an Easter egg as well. And until he stops being an alpha hole, she's not telling him anything. It's not happening.
Oh, Hunt.
End scene. Da-da-da-da!
You know, a funny thought I had. I forgot exactly what you said, but I think it was something like Hunt wasn't going to say anything. But I was like, what if he was like, you know what? If you let me watch some Sunball, I might let some slip. Because this girl isn't letting me watch TV, but like, if you let me watch some Sunball,
I will unclassify this for you. Yeah, he's like, I'm so bored. Please help me. Send help. He like leaves a note on her ruined desk. Please help me. Oh my gosh. Can you even imagine?
Oh, geez.
I love that.
That'd be hilarious.
The holidays may seem far away, but they are approaching fast. Consider giving the gift of reading this year to your loved ones and yourself as well. Shop our favorite selection of Kindles right in the Goodish Girls Amazon storefront. And don't forget, we are giving you one free month of Kindle Unlimited when you sign up for the Kindle Unlimited membership. Find the link right in our show notes. All right, so that brings us to the conclusion of our guided tour of Crescent City, chapters 14 through 19. If you are sticking around for the House of Theories and Lore, hang out. If not, again, if you have not finished this series and you do not want any spoilers, please go read some more chapters, finish the book, and then once you're done with this book, then you can come back and listen to the end of all of these episodes. Or you are welcome to stick around if you don't care about spoilers. If that is your prerogative, more power to you. But if you are not sticking around, thank you for joining us and the Goodish Girls. My name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
Woo! All right, guys. House of Theory and Lore. It is time. Mm-hmm. I have one big question this week.
I snuck a look at your big question.
It's a big question. Who is the Viper Queen, really? Who is she truly, right? We know next to nothing about her. We know that she has old powers, and it was mixed with her venom and something strange. That's what we know, right? We know in this series she was likely around for the fall of Midgard, making her pretty freaking old. There are notes about her possibly being connected to the Valg because she has black blood and she does blood oaths, right? Which we know that there are blood oaths in like Throne of Glass. Can you give us a better explanation? Because I know you are a Throne of Glass queen. What does that look like, right?
The trauma with, like, is still fresh.
Maeve and that kind of stuff. So like, and how does that relate, do you think?
So essentially, in the fae culture of Throne of Glass, you don't necessarily have to be. So, okay, I'll try to sum it up super duper quick. So the Vog, you don't want to be Vog. They're essentially these beings. They're kind of like
an, you don't want to be that.
They're kind of like an infestation. Like they're almost parasitic in a sense, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't necessarily need to be Vog to make a blood oath, but it is a strong tie that you can make with someone. It's in the name, where essentially you make a vow and then someone drinks a little bit of your blood. So whenever you make a blood oath, you are essentially bound to this person. And depending on what your oath is, it's also kind of like making a bargain. And as we know, mm-hmm. you gotta be really careful with those. So depending on that blood oath, the people within that oath can give commands to one another. I was going to get an example, but I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that because I don't know.
This is spoiler zone. So,
okay.
You can this is where we say all things. So if you want to, everything's good.
If you haven't read Throne of Glass, earmuffs. But essentially, like, one example is Maeve, almost called her a different character in a different book. Maeve made a blood oath for Lorcan, for example, where, like, mm-hmm. his thing is he has to – or no, it was with Fenris and Gavriel that they were tasked to kill Lorcan.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially, like, a very evil symbiotic relationship. Kind of.
Yeah.
And essentially, if you were to break a blood oath, like, you're done. Like, immediately death.
Mm-hmm.
That's – now that I like, just finished Throne of Glass, like, a couple months ago. I didn't even – now that I know what a Vog is, that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's many speculations – that people think Rhys is Vog, which, I don't know. After someone pointed out one of the bonus chapters in CC3, where I'm like, that's not the Rhysand I know. That is not Rhysand behavior. Because one way that you can know if someone is Vog, they make artifacts, whether it is a black collar or a black ring.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, I'm about to hurt my own feelings because I saw this yesterday. So someone thinks that Azriel not necessarily is Vog, but like he has the potential because
Where are their receipts?
Because he okay. So people are comparing Azriel to Cal Tane, and in Throne of Glass, she always complains of these headaches that she has.
Mm-hmm.
Azriel also mentions getting headaches to the point to where that's actually one of his solstice gifts from Elaine. So people are like speculating, like, what if Azriel's having a little bit of a Cal Tane situation? It makes me really, really sad to think about.
Because, like, you mean, like, when the Vog, like, already had her?
So, like, in the process. Because she keeps on, and who else? Someone was also complaining of headaches, but that's, like, essentially a sign mm-hmm. that you are in the process of being infested.
Interesting.
Because I don't want him to be Vog, but people also think that Rhysand might be like a descendant of Maeve, which I could also kind of see.
Well, and then it goes back to the theory that I have heard, and I don't know if there's any basis to this either, like that Mor is like part of Maeve, or is Maeve, or a descendant of Maeve.
I don't know. So what if Mor.
I don't know. I don't know anything about her, but I think that it's too, like, obvious for her to be the bad guy. But also there's a lot of mystery behind her.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. So I don't think Sarah would do that to us.
Well.
With Rhysand.
Oh, I think she loves Rhysand too much.
Correct.
if this was Rebecca Yarros, Rebecca would
sacrifice them all.
Because she went in to Fourth Wing knowing that she was gonna, if you haven't read Fourth Wing, yeah. I won't spoil it, but she wrote one character knowing that he was gonna get got as soon as she wrote him.
The song Eternity by Alex Warren gets me every day.
I am guilty of making a really sad Throne of Glass edit to that song.
You're one of them.
I am no. one of them. Because I saw an opportunity and I'm like,
cannot
make a comment. No.
But then I bringing it back though, like to the Viper Queen. So because we know that Therion in previous in like future books takes the blood oath from her.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So like
I don't think that necessarily makes him Volg. I just think that is he made a blood oath. Cause like Aelin makes, which side rant, Throne of Glass, you probably weren't expecting it. I felt so bad for Adion. Homeboy wanted a blood oath so bad. And she was like, we'll thirsty. Get there. But first, Rowan, blood oath. Fenris, blood oath. Yes. Gabriel, blood oath. Lorcan,
she,
blood
like,
oath.
Can't.
And then, like, Adion, I'll pencil you in. I felt so bad. I was like, someone give this boy an oath.
Give him a glass of water. He's so thirsty.
I feel so bad for him. And I know people love to hate on Adion so much.
Adion smiled. Rowan.
Ugh.
Who is that?
Insert eagle screech.
Wah!
I also, speaking of Throne of Glass and Crescent City, I need Sarah J. Maas to hold my hand. And just, I need more clarification on how these worlds are happening and when they're happening. Because as we know from Throne of Glass, spoiler alert, whenever she is falling through worlds, she falls through Crescent City. We don't really know at what point she does. But
yeah, she just sees it.
But specifically, whenever she's falling through Velaris, it is... I think somewhere in between. Or no,
Faber's pregnant.
Yeah, I think it's during.
So it's Silver in Flames. Silver Flames. Yes.
So there's that of like they're already being an established timeline. But people are theorizing that Midgard is like the Throne of Glass world because we have Lydia. And her sons, who she specifically names after Brennan, who is in Throne of Glass. And she says that she names him that because she is a descendant of Brennan. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, so are these happening simultaneously? Is she truly a descendant? And like in Crescent
City
world?
Aelin is a descendant, right? Of Brennan as well. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what if they're sisters? Because if they're happening simultaneously, the three universes are at the same time, right? And she says that she's a descendant and she like has kids that she named after, right? And we know it's happening together.
Mm-hmm.
What if she is not a descendant of Aelin, but she is a sister to Aelin or some sort of relation currently to Aelin?
Okay. Or do you think it's like an alternative universe to where like if Aelin was in Crescent City, she is Lydia? Because like one thing that made me really really sad whenever I read it is whenever they go to the Viper Queen's office and they describe like what everything looks like, I think they mention it in this chapter. I know it's mentioned for sure in the later books of the fighting pit, and I'm like, what if it's the same pit that Sam fought in Throne of Glass? R.I.P. my Shayla.
So like do you mean like, so in our world there's the theory of there are infinite number of universes and in each universe there is some, you are there but you are something different,
maybe? Because I feel like this is why I need Sarah to hold my hand, because people think that like Rune and Rhysand are related, but what if Rune is just
it is Rhysand in an alternate universe?
Yeah.
And Jessaba is more. And the Viper Queen is Amarin.
Maybe. I don't know. I had another point to bring up too.
But then who would be Bryce? Nesta. I don't know. That's
maybe. Because I feel like people compared them a bunch and they do get along.
They do get along. And Nesta does have that connection with Bryce's mom.
And the star, bro.
And the star. Hmm.
I have a theory that I am sitting on until we, I think it's chapter 29, where I like went so far down a rabbit hole and I was like typing out so many things. I was like, but wait, there's this theory and then this theory connects to this theory. And I have something
yes, so good. Yes, bust out the strings. The sticky notes.
Listen, who do you think ACOTAR 6 is going to follow?
So I have a couple of different of ideas for this. So part of me thinks that because Sarah J. Maas's favorite number is 3.
Interesting.
And the reason why I think this is because in her books, when she uses repetitive wording, she usually uses it in 3 or more, right? Down and down and down and around and around and around. Okay, so you have 3 series, right? You have ACOTAR, Throne of Glass, Crescent City. Mm-hmm. In ACOTAR, you have 3 books. 1, 2, 3. Then you have a novella. Then you are on book 1. Is it 1 of 3 and then a novella? If it is this the finishing of Nesta's story? Does Nesta get 2 more books? No, don't say no. Hold on. Let me finish my dream. Nesta gets 2 more books and then a novella and then Elaine because there's 3 sisters. And then it would be even, right? So that is one thought. My other thought is that she's going to leave Nesta as is for now, and then she's going to move on to Elaine. Because I think each sister will get their point of view done. Okay, now say. Now I've crushed my dreams.
In my opinion, it's a missed opportunity. So the way that Crescent City 3 ends, a part of it, is whenever Bryce is returning the mask to Nesta, she specifically says, go find out what your tattoo means.
Yeah, it's a perfect entry point for another Nesta book.
Exactly. So I'm like, if she doesn't continue with Nesta and if we just like let that flow, I mean, I love Nesta and I want her to have another book and I really do not want her finding out what her tattoo means, and I don't want that to be like a side quest story. I want it to be the main thing.
It's Nessa main character energy.
And I want more of her in the Valkyries.
Yes. I want her in Valkyries. I want her in Cassian. I want all Nesta things. Please be a Nesta book. Have you
seen the theory of Nesta and Cassian not being real mates?
I don't actually want to talk about that, but thank you.
I see your opinion. I hear it, but next.
No, thank you.
It hurts my feelings, but I can kind of see people's thoughts.
Nope. I can't do it.
I think what would be fun, and I know people might agree, but I think it'd be a fun thought, is if the real love triangle, instead of it being Elaine, Lucien, and Azriel, if it was Cassian, Nesta, and Eris.
So there is a chapter that I think was written, never published, of Cassian, Azriel, and Nesta.
Oh, 100%. There was I know exactly what you're talking about, and she wrote it, and then the publisher's like, no. I'm like, yeah. Same thing with Lorcan did. I knew that line, and I knew I was going to be pre-pissed before I like finally got to that line. That sentence is the bane of my existence.
It kills me. I can't. Yes, I hate it. I hate it. So the question, who is the Viper Queen really? I would like to know, especially if the next ACOTAR book is about Nesta and it does cross over with Crescent City, where, like, are we going to find out more?
I kind of don't want it to cross over again, not going to lie.
It has to, right?
I mean, like, I know it, like, I can see, like, I'm fine with the histories crossing over, but to me, my brain didn't really compute well with Bryce and Velaris. I don't know. It felt too weird.
I hear you, but also, like, they're at the end of the series, like, they're running out of power. So, like, do they have to open up another portal to try and figure that out? I don't know. Is there going to be problems in Velaris that Nesta has to open a portal somehow, some way, with maybe the harp and get Bryce's help this time? Also, we have the Star Sword and Azrael's stuff that needs to be together too. So, like, I think the odds of a crossover not happening are pretty slim.
I don't know. I feel like, again, I feel like I can see the histories crossing over. I don't know.
I don't know. We'll find out. I don't know. That's my question. Those are my questions today. Those are my questions. Who is the Viper Queen, truly? Do you have any stuff you want to throw in today?
Just the thing with the pit. That was the only thing that I really had. Ooh, wait. No. Well, kind of. Because whenever we were talking about Rune and the ordeal / the oracle, they say that makes up two great rites, like, in their culture. And in Akatar, they just have the blood rite.
Right.
But I'm like, what if there's a rite that we don't know about? Because I feel like the rite, also the rite isn't strictly, I would say, Fae. It's Illyrian.
Right. But here it's for the Fae. And they also mention a worm, which I thought was fun.
Mm-hmm. Because I think, hear me out, I feel like there are ordeals and maybe an oracle. Hold on. I'm thinking of this as I'm talking. So I feel like the blood rite, even though in Velaris they call it a rite, I feel like that is more of just like a structured ordeal that they go through. And Farah, now being fairy, I think she had her ordeal, which is before she turned. And that could have been her fighting the wyvern, even though it's like part of her trials. But like, I feel like Sarah saying that in this book and bringing it up again, like, she didn't have to, but she did. And what if, I feel like kind of the bone carver could be like an oracle in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Probably, yeah. I mean, he can see a lot of things.
And there's the theory that he shows people what will kill them.
I have heard that.
So, and I also think, like, even though people say that Elaine's power, and I think it's even stated in the book, because I want to say Azriel's the one that clocks, or maybe it's Lucian, where they're like, oh, you're a seer. But I'm like, what if Elaine is, like, now essentially just an oracle?
That's also possible. Those are all good thoughts. All good thoughts. Amazing. And until next week, my friends, thank you for hanging out with the House and Theory of Lore. My name is Dallas.
I'm Madison.
We'll see you next week. Can't get enough of the Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.